This week, I am way out west. I'm in the middle of the desert. I'm in beautiful Palm Springs in California. This is quite the location and quite the event. It's actually my sixth year hosting and moderating an incredible event that brings together lots of brilliant business minds, people who have created and now run their own incredible companies. They make a ton of money. So why do these remarkable business people leave behind their businesses just to come all the way out to Palm Springs? Well, for a start, there are some amazing speakers here, I'll give you that, plus a quite remarkable event moderator. But it's not even for those reasons either. They come here because they want to build new connections. They want to grow their network. They have come to the conclusion that true business success is always linked to the size, the scope, and the power of your actual network. This event, look at the size of the audience seating behind me. This event brings together like-minded people so that they can make those essential connections. And there is nothing more valuable in business than who you know. But actually, if I'm going to be more accurate, it's not even who you know, it's who knows you. That truly marks the difference. Because who you know is one thing, but who knows you is far more powerful. These people who will shortly be filling this room have come to the correct conclusion that their network, in other words, the people who know who they are, know what they do, and know how good they are at it, aren't just a network of contacts, friends, and colleagues. No, they are an unofficial sales team. And there is nothing more powerful than having that person in your network who will pick up the phone and recommend you to someone else. That is the power of the network. So this week, I'm going to delve into some of the things that you can do to continue building your network and to help grow your success. That's all coming up on Master of Influence. So let's talk network. I think we all know that it's pretty important, and we've always heard that phrase, it's all about who you know. Well, here's where I agree, but also somewhat disagree. We can know lots and lots of people, but it really doesn't count unless they know us. A lot of people I connect with say, on LinkedIn, I've got 1,000 connections. What do you think of that? How cool. And you know, well done. It is quite cool. You've built up 1,000 connections. But actually, I am far more impressed by 100 communications than 1,000 connections. Because a connection is someone who you basically just clicked on and said, yes, I'll be your connection on LinkedIn, or I'll be your friend on Facebook. But if you aren't having a regular and involved conversation with them, if you aren't constantly finding a way to create conversation with them, then frankly, they're almost nothing because you've let it wither and die. I have always said that a really good network should be treated like a fine and delicate plant, like a little plant you're growing inside the house. Every day you need to nurture it, water it, check it out, see what it's up to, give it what it needs. And your network needs close attention. I say to a lot of businesses that I speak to, far more valuable than a piece of marketing or some other outreach, maybe by email, far more valuable is when a friend of a friend of a friend picks up the phone or sends a message and goes, hey, you know John, you've just connected with him, he's great, I would do business with John. That third party testimonial, that's worth its weight in gold. That really counts. And so the really smart business players right now do everything they can to build up a very active and a very alive network. They nurture it. They stay in touch with it. They constantly reach out to it because when the time is right, they will want to connect with that network and actually make something happen. So a network is truly valuable. After the break, which is coming up shortly, I'm going to share with you a story of just by putting myself out there, I met someone who made a huge impact on my life and my own career success. And if I hadn't been out there, I never would have met this person, and the incredible event that took place would never have happened. I'll tell you more about that later. But first, here at this incredible event in Palm Springs, I've been bumping into some real movers and shakers. I caught up with a gentleman called Brian Riley from Barclays Capital. This guy puts together multi-million dollar deals. You're about to hear more in a minute. But we had a little chat about the aspect that is most important in building a great network, trust. I'm with Brian Riley here. Brian, you pitch multi-million dollar deals all of the time, and you talk to your team and you prep them for it, but what do you believe it truly comes down to?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Mark, I've been doing this for over 20 years, and what it does fundamentally come down to is the same thing it came down to 20 years ago, and that is building relationships and about the people. And it really is investing the time with management teams and boards of directors long before they're ready to do that deal, years before, to have them to really build the trust in each other. Right? We want to trust them. They want to trust us. I do think that that is an art that a lot of people fail to appreciate and really invest time in these days.
I mean, I 100% agree with you. I think it's an old adage, right? But people buy people.
Yes.
And sometimes you'll feel that, well, my solution is so great, my product is so great, they're just going to buy it.
Yeah, no, that's not necessarily true. Look, like we always like to think that we're smarter than the next guy, but we are really selling a service. We're selling people, and it is, you know, most of the people in our business are smart people who are thinking of the next innovative product. Every so often, we might come up with an idea that others haven't thought of.
Right.
But they're not going to trust you on that idea unless you've been spending the time with them beforehand. So at the end of the day, come down to the people.
Did you hear those two key messages? One, it takes time to build that incredible level of trust. Invest in people. Take your time. Lay all the groundwork. And then the results will come. And two, it was such a clear message. People buy people. That's why the value of your network is so high. It is all about not only who you know, but who knows you. I'll be back with more discussion on networking and more after the break. Welcome back to Master of Influence. Still to come, we have our mini influence tip, also how to present like a master, and I'll be meeting a 21-year-old kid, if I can be so rude, who is making money because he set up a business while still on campus. Incredible guy, very influential, and just wait till you hear what he has to say. But first, I was wandering around the Halls of Power, this incredible event here in Palm Springs, and I met a business leader called Gary Kadash, who spent time, excuse me, that shouldn't be making a noise. But first, I was wandering the hallways of power here in Palm Springs. I met a gentleman called Gary Kadash, a business owner, who shared with me his ideas on how to really create influence and have people come to their own conclusion that you and your idea are worth buying. First of all, Gary, I love your hairstyle.
Thank you. It's a solar panel.
It's a solar panel. It works. Gary, what excites you? What ignites you about business?
It's just a privilege to be able to be in a position to create a vision, share it with a group of people, put the resources around it, and execute against it.
And I think that really raises an amazing point, because creating a vision is, it's about having influence, because your vision may not be shared by everyone. How do you get other people to buy into your vision?
You need to make it their idea. You need to put it out there and let them develop the basic thoughts of it so that it comes to them, so they have the aha moment. When it's the aha moment theirs, and you say, that's a great idea, what do we need to do to get it done? And they then tell you, and you say, okay, here are the resources, let's go.
Very wise words from Gary there. I always love to hear someone who's done well in business and who is passionate and excited about it and is prepared to share some of the insight. People like Gary, they're the ones that are driving businesses forward, and I just get very excited to see what they have to say and to apply anything I can learn to my own business and, of course, to share it with you right here on Master of Influence. And I do this really because I think it's very important to find new ideas. And the best way to find new ideas, of course, is to meet new people. And I'll be honest, sometimes there is nothing more awkward than the prospect of going out and making contact with complete strangers. And I have to say, having been brought up in the United Kingdom, where people are quite conservative and they don't like to talk to each other. In fact, the most silent place you'll find anywhere in the world is a British elevator full of British people. We all just stand there like this. Nobody say anything. That's because that's how we were brought up. I remember in school being told, sit down, shut up. It's not encouraged. Now, in the US, where of course I now live, the story is a little bit different. People are more excited to talk to each other and to make those connections. But still, it is not easy to go up to a stranger and start a conversation. But here's something you absolutely need to consider. If you don't reach out and make that new connection, you don't know what you're missing out on. Because every single person you add to your network can, in fact, add to your success. And this was really well illustrated to me during a quite unexpected incident that took place in Las Vegas. Here's the story. I had been giving a speech in Seattle, and I had 1.5 days to basically get myself to Miami for another speech. So my original route from Seattle was through Chicago and then down to Miami. But it was the middle of winter, and being the sort of person I am, I like to plan. I checked the weather, and the weather in Chicago was horrific. It was going to be snowing, and if you've ever flown through Chicago during the winter, you'll know that if it snows, things can get somewhat ugly really very fast. So I called my travel guy and I said, okay, I have to get to Miami, but can you route me through somewhere else? So he looks at the map, he looks at the availability, and he goes, how about Vegas? Well, that sounds good to me. Who doesn't like a trip to Vegas? It doesn't matter what the excuse is. So I fly Seattle to Vegas. I get to Vegas quite late. I check into my room. I go up to my room and I'm sitting there thinking, well, do you know, I'm hungry, but I'm also very tired. What should I do? Well, I could have ordered room service, which would have been fine. But there's always that nagging element of me, Mark Jeffries, that says, you know, you should get out there. You should get downstairs because you just never know. So I did. I went downstairs and I was staying at the Venetian Palazzo, and I found this restaurant owned by Mario Batali, and it's called Carne Vino. Now, Carne Vino is great for a number of reasons. Number one, they serve wonderful steak and really good wine, and you know, what's wrong with that? But number two reason is because they have this huge bar with lots of seats. Now, when I'm traveling on my own, which I do a lot, I like to sit at a bar. I think if you sit at a bar eating, everything is very relaxed, plus you can chat to people. Whereas, if you choose to sit at a table, like a table for two, and you're sat there on your own eating your food, people walk past you and they give you that pitiful look. Oh, they go, look at him. He's got no friends. Well, I don't like that look, thank you very much. So I never sit at a table for two when I'm on my own. So I get down to the restaurant, big bar, there's one seat left. On my right is somebody we'll just refer to as a shout lout. This is someone who is speaking at the same volume that other people scream. So I wasn't interested in talking to him. To my left was a very nice lady. We got chatting and talking. After a while, I soon realized that the person I was talking to, this lady, had no connection with my business. She doesn't book speakers. She doesn't book event moderators. So there was nothing much she could do for me. However, when we continued to discuss our worlds, I mentioned that I quite liked the idea of being back on television, not as a host or a presenter anymore, but as an expert in my field. She looks at me and says, well, there's not much I can do about that because I'm not involved in television. However, there is somebody I know in New York who is a PR person. Maybe I'll hook you up with this PR person. I said, that's a great idea. We made our farewells. I went upstairs and that was the end of that. True to her word, she sends me an email connecting me to this PR person in New York. She's called Maury. Maury and I meet in New York, and basically, long story short, she ends up, through her connections, getting me on NBC's Today Show. I'm sat on the Today Show being interviewed on how to get America back to work. Now, I know this is big because a lot of people watch the Today Show. I can't begin to explain how much business I won because I had been on the Today Show. I had been seen on the Today Show, and companies started booking me as a result. I can't begin to tell you how much business I won because of just that reality. And now, this is what freaks me out. What would have happened had I not gone downstairs that evening? What would have happened had I stayed in my bedroom and just got room service? An incredible amount of business would not have come my way. So the moral of this rather long tale is that if you don't go out networking, you don't know who you might have just missed meeting. Back to Master of Influence. Here at this event in Palm Springs, I finally caught up with somebody I wanted to talk to, a 21-year-old business founder. His name is Vincent Quigg. He's founded more than just one business, and he was being featured at the event itself as an incredible entrepreneur of the future. And I wanted to find out what made him tick.
It's a business I started in high school. Using what I knew from a sales job at Best Buy,
right?
I was able to understand that really a lot of people needed mobile electronic repair.
You mean basically broken phone, fix it up?
Sure. So iPads, iPhones, devices that are in customers' hands every day. When they drop, there's a very good chance that they'll crack sometimes. So I was able to provide a solution for customers who had cracked devices.
And you run this business on campus. You have 3 employees.
Sure.
How did you know you were going to make any money?
Yeah, you know, it's something that I knew that people needed. And when I went to the school, people were contacting me when I didn't have a location. So I needed a location to set up and really, you know, find a way to help these people who had damaged devices, and nobody in the city did it. So I was able to open a location, find some fellow college students who were willing to help out in the process of fixing the devices, and we're doing great.
And if you don't mind me asking, did you offer them like a salary, a wage, or on a per fix basis?
Yeah, so we have an appointment system online. Customers can go online, select an appointment time, and then we choose from our employees' availability.
Right.
They show up to that appointment, and we pay them per device. There's no hourly wages that we have to pay,
right.
And customer meets employee.
So it's an IT solution as well, really. It's
correct.
About matching up the supply and the demand.
Yeah.
I love it. One other question. How do you deal with those people? We know there's always these people who say, oh, it'll never work. Give it up. Silly idea.
Yeah, you know, I've overcome those people without even knowing. I think a lot of what I do is just exploring businesses in the marketplace, trying to just buy and sell without even having the brand, really.
Right.
Just hustling it and finding out that I sell more than what I expected, and I needed to come up with a logo or a brand, and I think that's happened in a multiple of businesses that I've started, and you know, it's great to overcome those people who say, you know, it can't be done.
You know, I have always maintained that if you can deliver a great presentation, if you can capture an audience and have them listen to you, your rise will always be that much faster. People truly love a great speaker. So every week on Master of Influence, I like to share a couple of ideas on how you can present like a master. Very often when presenting, there's some confusion about A, how to move, and B, where to stand. A lot of people, especially beginners in the speaking world, will see this and find it very tempting, very alluring. Here it is, the podium. Now, this particular podium, as you can see, is completely see-through, perspex of some sort. But the reason most people come to a podium like this is because they feel safe. They feel like their body is half covered up by the podium. Therefore, this audience is not quite as intimidating as they imagine it to be, and they hide here. Very often people hold on to the podium, sometimes with both hands. They often lean forward and go, I'll tell you lot something. This is not good. The minute you choose to hide behind a podium, what you're saying to the audience is, you're only going to see half of me. You're only going to see half of my impact. Move away. Now, unless you are physically tied to a microphone that sits on the podium, you are free to move. Then things get a little scary, because as soon as you leave the safety of the podium behind, no longer are the notes in front of you and you're fully visible. But this is the absolute best approach to take when it comes to presenting to the audience. Why? Because you want them to trust you, to know you, to truly see who you are. As soon as you leave the shelter of the podium, the more open and available you appear. Now then we come to the question of walking. Now, a lot of people get nervous on the stage, and they do a lot of this. They walk to the front, they see the eyes of the audience, so they walk back a bit. Then they think, well, I'm a bit far away from the audience, so they walk back forward again. And then they see the eyes of the audience, and they walk back again. And this goes on, sometimes for half an hour. It's very distracting. So my advice is this. Set your feet in concrete, and don't move for a short while. From this position, I could address a room of 10,000 people quite easily without moving my feet. However, when I choose to move, I'm going to make it deliberate and I'm going to go to a new location, maybe near this podium, but not behind it. And always do the move during a transition. So we've talked about standing on the stage, but what about moving? That's my transition. I'm now in a new location. Now, the new location is like offering this audience a different channel to watch. They like it. It looks slightly different, and they will continue to watch you. So yes, move. Just don't move in a crazy fashion, and try your very best not to take up residence behind a podium. Never forget, people buy people, and they buy people they like. It's no mistake in business to make yourself even more likable. One way to achieve this is by occasionally serving up a relaxed compliment when meeting up with someone new. Nice tie. I'm liking your new business card. Very creative. How's that beautiful dog of yours? These subtle and seemingly innocuous comments earn you an instant payback credit and, as a result, a more buyable brand. So remember, where possible, share the love. Many years ago, when I was involved in shooting a television program in the United Kingdom, which, by the way, nobody ever watched, the sound engineer, whose name was Dave, I remember he was a very calm driver. We'd be driving through the streets of London and we'd have all the equipment in the back. And you know how sometimes someone just cuts you up and you just want to scream and you're so enraged? He would just let everyone go. And we would actually start to get angry with him, going, Dave, would you just show a bit of aggression? And he used to turn around and say, if you give a bit of love, you get some love back. I'll be honest, at the time we used to relentlessly make fun of him for that, but actually, he wasn't far wrong. By the way, guess what? Another email has literally flooded in, and it comes from Sabrina Gold, and I wanted to answer this question. And if you have a question at any time, you, of course, can also send in your question. One easy way to do that is just tweet me. I am at MarkJeffries1. You'll find me on Twitter, at MarkJeffries1. Tweet the question, and I will answer it when I get a chance, of course, on this program. Sabrina Gold is talking about networking and says, I feel very awkward sometimes when chatting with someone new because I never know how long is long enough. That's a very good question, because we've all been involved, have we not, in a discussion when we meet somebody new, where at first it's actually all going very well and we're quite enjoying talking to this new person. And then as the seconds tick by, we suddenly realize that we're getting just a tiny bit bored. And then we become very bored and the other person won't shut up. And we're trapped and we never like that, do we? So the golden rule, Sabrina, is actually not to worry about your own feelings. It's not about you. It's always about the person in front of you. You must always release them first, and you want to release them before they ask to be released. So it's quite difficult, but it does involve looking at their signals. If their arms are crossed, if they're constantly looking over your shoulders, let them go. Give them your business card. Say to them, I'm going to let you go. And I promise you, you will win. If you release them first, you win. If they ask to be released, then you're in trouble. That's how you know how long is long enough when networking. All right, more letters next time, or emails, or tweets. And now it's time to step outside. So let's summarize. Your network is truly important, and you owe it to yourself to not just grow it, but to nurture it, and to look for every single opportunity to add somebody new, because you just never know where it'll go. That's it from Palm Springs, but don't worry, I'll be back soon with more Master of Influence.